Supreme and pure. It was not that he had even the slightest interest in it, and he shouldn't have done it, but somehow he was under some pressure. The first painting that he ever sold, so he was under some pressure, and he became a little bewildered and he did it. So sometimes things like this happen because of habit, bad habit from our conditional lives. Just like Prabhupada tells a story about the one devotee. He had previously been a thief. I don't know if you heard that story. He'd been a thief, professional, but now he was a devotee. So he and his devotee friends, they went on pilgrimage, just walking across India to some holy place. Took several days, so they would just sleep out along the way under the trees, carry on the next morning. So the first night, they stopped somewhere, and they all went to sleep, and he also went to sleep. But his normal practice was that every night at midnight, he would get up and go door to door. That was a different type of door to door. Yes. Don't you do that either. He'd go stealing. So at midnight he just woke up. Couldn't sleep. It was just too deeply ingrained into him. He just had to steal something. But then he thought, no, I can't do that. I'm with the devotees. I can't steal from the devotees. But his mind, he was just so used to it, was just forcing him. And he was fighting with himself. So what he did, he picked up one devotee's bag. They're all sort of lying here and there around a little area. He picked up one devotee's bag and took it and put it by another devotee. Then he took that devotee's bag and put it by another devotee and that devotee's bag. So in this way, he moved all the bags around. In the morning, they woke up. The one devotee woke up and he saw, oh, my bag's gone. What happened? Then he looked over by another devotee. He said, there's my bag. You took my bag. But then another devotee said, no, you have my bag. So there's all this confusion. What? Everybody's got everyone else's bag. And they just couldn't understand what happened. So then the thief, ex-thief devotee, said, you know, I'm really sorry. I just couldn't help myself. I had this urge to steal. But I just managed to control it that much that I just moved the things around. So this is not surprising if, you know, they say old habits die hard. You can't easily bend old bamboo. You know, it may crack. And things like this. Yes. So we're coming into Krishna consciousness very conditioned. And now we're being told to do some other things. Chant Hare Krishna. Follow the regulative principles and so on. Yes. So sometimes a devotee may slip. Not because they really want to, but it's just that habit gets the better of them, or they make a mistake, or even they may get pressurized into something by their family or friends or somebody. So, like that, someone may commit an abominable action, something that they really shouldn't do. So then what do we do as devotees? Do we then kick him out? We saw him drinking a cherry liqueur. So, goodbye. you go away. No, we don't do like that. We try to help the devotee to become reformed. And here Krishna says, even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly, because he's properly situated, maybe not in his activities right now, but he's properly situated in his determination. In his mind, he has made up his mind that this is actually what I'm doing, but because of habit and so on, sometimes a little confusion is there. But actually the decision is there that no, I'm a devotee. So as long as the devotee is like that, then we accept them as saintly persons, as devotees. And we don't go around talking behind his back, did you hear about ... somebody? Did you hear what she did? Really? Tell me all about it. And then I'll report it to my connections also. Not like that. That someone somehow, something goes wrong like that, then next week they come to the Namahatta. And when they come in, everyone looks at them, then looks at each other and says, that's him. And as soon as he walks over to you, you turn the other way. Yeah. Not like that. As long as the devotee remains committed to devotional service, then we accept them. And if there's some weakness, then rather than reject them, we'll try to be compassionate and help them. If they need some encouragement and assistance to get back on track. This is our process. Our process is one of mercy. If you give mercy, you'll get mercy. I don't know, does anyone here think that they will never need mercy? They'll never need someone to be kind to them, to help them on in their lives, either material or spiritual. Does anyone think, I've got it together. I'm completely on the ball, no problem. Well, actually, we all need a lot of mercy. And Krishna says, Ye yatamam prabhajante tam satitaiva bhajamyaham. As they surrender to me, I reciprocate accordingly. So if we try to be helpful to the devotees and kind and merciful to the devotees and to everyone, actually, but particularly the devotees, then we'll get mercy. Yes, but if we're not like that, if rather we think, ah, look at that person, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with that person. Then someday when we need help, then the same thing will happen to us. You know, Prabhupada said you should never waste a grain of rice, because if you do, in the future, you will find yourself someday short that one grain. And you might think, ah, one grain of rice short. What difference does that make? But the thing is, it will make the difference at that time. And after all, one grain of rice plus another one, and you know, you keep adding, eventually it adds up to a meal, or two, or three, or four. And so the idea is, if you waste like that, then someday you will just find yourself with nothing, and there will be nothing that you can do, actually. Yes. Like sometimes on the trains in India, Sometimes the trains stop somewhere, anywhere, nowhere, in the middle of nowhere. And sometimes they stop for a day, sometimes 2 days, 3 days. And unless you like eating grass or leaves from trees, there's not much for you to eat. So you may be big, rich, Lani, business person from Berylum. And you, every day, you may have twice as much as you need to eat. But if you waste like that, Prabhupada said, sooner or later you'll end up on that train in India for a few days. And then you may offer 1,000,000 rands, you'll not get one mouthful. Yes, it's a fact. So if you give mercy, you'll get mercy, but if you don't, if you're not kind, when devotees need kindness, then when you need it, and it'll make the difference between making or breaking your heart, then you won't get it, and then you'll be broken. And that hurts a lot. So we don't want to be like that. We should try to be very kind. Of course, you know, there's another situation. And Krishna talks about that at the beginning of this chapter. Chapter 9, verse 3. Krishna says, Ashradadana purusha dharmas yasya parantapa. Aprapyamam navartante mritu samsaravartmani. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, a conqueror of enemies. Therefore they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. So two situations are being talked about. In both cases, someone falls. They get into some problem in their spiritual lives. But in one case, they remain properly situated in their determination that I will carry on, somehow I will carry on, despite my problem. In the other case, no, they just go away and they just get back into material life. So you see there are two different categories there. So, for someone like that, then Krishna says, they return to the path of birth and death. Of course, we should also try to be kind to them. But particularly if someone is a devotee and they're having some difficulty, but they're trying still to be devotees, we should really try and help them and not deride them. Is that okay? Is that all right? So let's try and do that. Next time someone gets into difficulty, not if, but just when, that's all, then see if you can help nicely. Because you never know. It may be you. And someday it will be you, actually. So you can try and help. And Krishna appreciates it so much if we try to serve the devotees and help the devotees and be compassionate. Will it be a sin if I work in a restaurant where I have to serve guests meat? Well, in a word, yes. Not a good idea. Try and get another job. Will it be a sin if I work in a job where I have to shoot people? I become a hitman for the mafia. Can't get any other job. Will it be a sin? I think so. Prabhupada pointed out that according to the Vedas, the people who raise the animals, the people who transport them, the people who kill them, the people who deliver the meat to the shops, the people who sell it, the people who buy it, the people who carry it home, the people who cook it, and last but not least, but not only, the people who eat it. They all get equal, yeah. Because sometimes it happens in a devotee family. Like I remember when I joined, there was one young lady in her sort of mid-20s or so, married. She was an English girl, white girl, married to some Englishman. And he was not interested in Krishna consciousness. Zero. He just wanted to carry on eating meat, drinking, and all the rest. But he accepted her as his wife, and he was not about to break the relationship. He wanted it to carry on. So she was initiated by Prabhupada. And she came and asked Prabhupada that my husband insists that I cook him meat, so what should I do? And Prabhupada said, well, if you really have to, then it's all right. But not like, oh, fine. You know, just go to the butchers and get the best. And look up in the recipe book how to do it nicely. And make a festival of it. Not like that. Yeah. So why don't you try and get another job? Try and get another job. That'd be better. I mean, do you like it? Whoever you are. Do you enjoy it? There was one devotee. He just joined the temple in Cape Town. And he was working in a meat restaurant. It was sort of like an everything restaurant. And it had vegetarian meals also. So the guests would ask him, what would you recommend? So he would say, well, today we have a very nice vegetarian plate here. Why don't you try that? And every time he just try and get them into it. Anyway, then he gave up the job and joined the temple. Oh, welcome to Verulam once again. Thank you. Can a non-devotee use neck beads? And if so, can they eat meat? When our process is to try to get people involved. So, to give you an example of how sort of liberally, freely, Prabhupada was thinking and how dynamically. One time he had a discussion with some devotees that we will sell Gaur-Nitai deities door to door. Not amongst the Hindu families only, but just we'll just go door to door in America, in Europe, to all the people. And we'll sell millions of these things. And we'll tell the people, these are Hare Krishna dolls. You put them on the mantelpiece, they'll bring you good luck. So that was Prabhupada's idea. Yeah, there's a conversation, it's recorded conversation, which is there in the Prabhupada folio. So Prabhupada was very liberal in his thinking. So it's possible for a non-devotee to use neck beads if it's going to influence them to start moving towards Krishna consciousness. Yeah. And then, you know, we can try and influence them to stop eating meat and so on like that. But if you wait for everyone to become a pure devotee first, then you may be waiting a long time, you know, and Krishna consciousness may not get spread much. You know, like the chanting of Hare Krishna. Some people say that if people are meat eaters, they should not be allowed to chant. But no, we try to get everybody to chant. First thing is chant. We don't worry so much they're eating meat, smoking, this and that. We don't worry so much. Not that we don't care, but it's not like some big thing. No, we get them to chant. And so then they chant, then they get a little taste. Then we try and be very nice and friendly to them, maybe bring them into the association of devotees a little, something like that. And then they see, oh, this is very nice. Nice people. This chanting Hare Krishna, this is nice. Then after a while they just lose interest in these things. But we don't sort of hammer people, so to speak, about these things. Yeah. Please explain who we should consider demons in this present age of Kali. How do we protect ourselves from them? Well, you know, there are two categories of materialists generally. The innocent and the demons. Innocent means they just don't know. Demons mean they have an antagonistic, anti-God attitude. You tell them, chant Hare Krishna, and they say, what? You get out of here. But an innocent person, you tell them, you chant Hare Krishna, and they may say, oh, yeah, okay. Not that they're into it, but they, you know, no big attitude against it. So when you see there is an attitude against Krishna and God consciousness and Krishna consciousness, that's a demon. But where they just don't know and they're just kind of foolish or not being exposed to it, we call them innocent. So we try to help the innocent and we avoid the demons. Why is Lord Jagannath incomplete? Only the face. Please explain. Well, of course, now that is a bit of a long story. But the basic point is, he is an unfinished deity. There was someone in the process going to make him into some beautiful, very, like, accurate human-like form. But he was interrupted. And he left that carving work, and the deity was left as we see them on the Rathayatra carts. But then the king, who the deities were being carved for, he came and saw these unfinished deities, and he thought, even though they're not finished, but they look really nice, so he just accepted them like that, and they've been worshipped like that since that time. Krishna says, those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, etc. What is the destination of the atheists? Oh, they go to hell. Yes, it's a fact. They join their friends. Because normally, you know, normally it's not just that they don't like God. Normally they're big meat eaters. They're really into intoxication. Kind of gross people. Very materialistic people, usually. Just like Prabhupada told a story about one Christian preacher trying to preach to the miners, coal miners in Wales. So he went and he decided, I will preach to these men to become Christians by telling them, convincing them that they should not go to hell. So he told them that there's a place called hell, and it is very hot and very dark, and you don't want to go there. And the miners said, well, that's what it's like down the mines. But we don't mind that. So we don't mind going to hell. So then the preacher said, well, only the people who drink a lot and smoke a lot and things like this, cheat a lot and gamble a lot, only those types of people go to hell. And the miner said, well, all of our relatives do those things, so we'll be there with our relatives, so we don't mind going to hell. So then the preacher said, gee, well, what to say now? He said, oh, and in hell there are no newspapers. And the miner said, oh, really? Well, that's very bad. Then we don't want to go to hell. Yeah, so those who hate God, they will go to a place where there is no sign of him. Nothing to do with him. So either they'll become animals, because animals wouldn't have the faintest idea what God is, or else they'll go to a hellish planet where you never hear about God or anything godly or good. Are the demons you mentioned in Bhoma Vrindavan, since there are only rumors of demons in Goloka Vrindavan? Bhoma Vrindavan means Vrindavan on this planet. Yes, the demons we talked about, they come into Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan on this planet, just like we read in Srimad Bhagavatam. But not in Goloka Vrindavan. There are no demons there at all. Krishna ate sand. To him all things are his energies. To us, we are defeated by dualities, for example, attachment and aversion. When we transcend duality, as we advance, will we see like Krishna? Well, yeah. But, you know, it's not that Krishna ate sand because he wanted to, or because he couldn't tell the difference between his curd's chutney and some earth. No, that's just a special pastime. So it's not that Krishna is just seeing everything as one. So one moment he may eat curd's chutney, the next moment he may eat dirt, the next moment he may eat you, or something like that, you know, just like unaware of what is going on. No. That was just a special pastime. And when we transcend, will we just offer Krishna anything? Here, take one plastic thing and eat it, Krishna, because it's all one, it doesn't make any difference. I'll take the curd's chutney, though. No, because when you advance, you'll be so concerned to please Krishna, you'll only offer him the best. That's all. Nothing less than the best for Krishna, out of love. But still, in another sense, we won't be so worried by happiness and distress, heat and cold, victory and defeat for ourselves. You know, we won't be so sensitive to what's going on around us in this world, like oversensitive. Yeah. But otherwise, what we will offer to Krishna, that'll only be the best. And not that we will then eat sand. Because, you know, it doesn't make any difference. But we will only eat food that has been offered to Krishna. Nothing other than prasadam. We won't touch it. We won't even think about it. Yeah. No more scaphes. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.